With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish Podcast.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to the Fulhamish Podcast. My name is Jack Collins, and I am joined by the Professor Benjamin.
Hello, everyone.
And Mr. WKD himself is Mr. Don Betts.
Hello, hello.
It's a little bit of trying times. No Fulham for almost 2 months now. Dom, you must be absolutely delighted.
As I said, I haven't missed football, so it's been fine. I've no interest in watching the Bundesliga when it returns because both the German teams I like are in the second division anyway. So.
Oh, look at you. Of a podcast of hipsters, you've actually decided to go full hipster straight away.
I wouldn't say choosing Hamburg is very hipster.
No, maybe not. Maybe not. Ben, how have you been holding up?
Yeah, good actually. I've been doing a lot of cycling. For those of you that actually care to look at my tweets, I've been just banging on about how much I cycle, really.
Yeah, you're doing some serious kilometres. So,
so I've done just over 450 in the last month. So, yeah, legs are getting a bit, you know, nice.
Yeah, I mean, I just haven't got a bike, so there's no way I would be doing that. But it's been an interesting
time. I don't
think
I would if I had one.
No, you wouldn't do anything, Dom. You very rarely ever show any enthusiasm about anything apart from darts. But anyway, we're going
to
try...
I won Champions League with about four different teams with Football Manager, mate. So I think you need to...
Dom, I've seen you do physical activity. You get tired after about 13 and a half seconds.
It's 12.
Oh, fair.
There we are. There we are. Look, we're going to change things around today. We're going to try and fill your time by building something of a monster ourselves. In fact, we're going to create a Frankenstein footballer based on all of Fulham's players. Let's say for the last 20 years, because ultimately, I don't think any of us are going to stretch too much further than that in our immediate knowledge bank. So that's where we're going for now. Ben, how tough has it been, before we reveal these categories, not to put Josabed in every single category?
Like, it has been so difficult. Literally, I was going through all the categories earlier and I just thought there's one player that completes every single one, and it is the man, Josabed. I think he's probably the closest that Fulham are ever going to get to a Ballon d'Or winner, to be honest.
And Dom, have you just stuck Carlos Bocanegra for everyone?
Yeah, it was between him, David Healy and Stephen Davis. They pretty much make the perfect footballer anyway, so I don't see why we need to pick anything else.
Okay, well, let's break this down. We are going to pick eight categories today. Vision, heading, left foot, right foot, pace, dribbling, passing and physicality. And without further ado, I'm going to start things off in vision. And I'm going to throw to you first, Dominique Betts.
I just went with Danny Murphy. He was sort of the first player that came to mind. And I think when I presume when you two were doing this as well, it was quite hard to pick a different player in each sort of category because, I mean... the really good player category we've had over the last 20 years. There isn't exactly a 30-40 man list here. But no, for vision, Danny Murphy came straight to my mind when I chose him. I think, you know, you can look at some of the games he played and some of the passes he played in crucial games. And I think, you know, when it comes to vision, for me, I think Danny Murphy was an obvious answer, and that's probably why he's first come to my mind.
Ben?
I think for me, it's probably a little bit of a toss-up between Murphy, as Dom says, and then Kenny. I think for me, I automatically think of someone who's in the heartbeat of that midfield, or like a number 10 role, and I think Kenny does that well. I'm also reluctant not to use Kenny up pretty early on, so I'm also going to go with Murphy there because I can... There are so many better players for other categories, but Murphy was the one that stood out in terms of his vision. I think obviously the pass for... Davies in a semi-final of the Europa League was a massive plus point for picking him in the vision category. It's a superb pass. So, yeah, Murphy for me.
I think I've thought a lot about this, and I love Danny Murphy at Fulham, but something that never kind of sprung to mind was him, you know, slide-ruling passes beyond the back four. And I was thinking about kind of what vision meant, and someone that sprang out to me was Ross McCormack. Mm. And I know it's difficult to pick players from years in the Championship, because it feels difficult to, you know, justify when we've had such a stint in the top tight. But when I think about Ross, he used to just finish from obscene angles. He used to look up and just instinctively know where everything was. And if it wasn't a pass for his strike partner or players around him, it was often like, oh, I'll just look up and chip the goalkeeper. Or from free kicks, he'd often hit the near post, catch the keeper unawares. And all of these things that kind of always sprung out as he's just got like a third eye on the game. He knows where players are around him. And so for a couple of more suggestions, I thought Klaus Jensen potentially was a dark horse in here. We obviously got him in the twilight of his career. But what a player. And I think that one of the standout memories of his time and thing is him just sort of roaming around with his big bald head and controlling the midfield. And so, I'm surprised because I know you're a throwback merchant and I'm surprised that Klaus Jensen didn't at least get a look in for you.
Yeah, Klaus Jensen, he did get a look in, but I feel like because Danny Murphy sort of popped my mind straight away, I feel like it would make the most sense to choose him. I guess if, you know, Klaus Jensen, I do think he's underrated to an extent when, you know, we talk about the best midfielders Fulham had in the Premier League era, because that whole sort of Coleman team, I feel like, not necessarily gets forgotten about, but obviously everyone talks about, you know, the Tigana promotion side, the Hodgson's Europa League team, then moving ahead to Slav's promotion side. But I do think, you know, what Coleman did with the Fulham team, especially during his earlier stage of his Fulham managerial career, it sort of does get lost.
Yeah, potentially. Ben, was there anyone else that jumped out for you apart from Danny Murphy?
Well, obviously you've got the captain of the current side, Kearney. I'm always impressed with K-Mac's vision because I think he's the kind of guy that likes to keep the possession circulating. He's always good at picking a pass. It doesn't necessarily, like for me, I think you have a clear definition where you look at slide rule passes and passes in behind and finishing. And I think mine, when I think of vision, it's traditionally someone that sits a little bit deeper and maybe just sees things that other people don't. They like to stretch a play, so that's why I like McDonald's vision as well. I think we've had a couple, but nothing that really stands out to the guys that you've suggested.
Okay, let's move on to heading, and this feels like a two-horse race. Dom, which of the horses have you gone for?
So there's a couple which I've been sort of semi-undecided with, but for heading, obviously, which came to straight away, obviously with recency bias, but then also next to him, competing with obviously Brian McBride, and thinking about it, it's quite hard because you see Mitrovic being this tall, physical presence in the box, but if you think about it, it's not like he scores predominantly a huge amount of his goals with his head, so it's a tough one for me, but I really just want to include him in the side, and I don't have him in for anything else, so I am going to stick with Alexander Mitrovic.
Ben, did you go the other way?
I don't know. When I had my list down, I had four obvious standouts. I had McBride, like Dom did. I had Mitrovic as well. And then I had, obviously, you had the Thames Barrier of Hangeland and Hughes. And then I think there was a couple more that I wanted in there. Like, just looking for a couple of lists of players that I had written down, there was also Matt Smith, who, you know, would probably be unforgotten with a few people, but he was very handy in the air.
And still is, in fact. I think there was a statistic last week released that he's basically still winning the most headers in the division and still he's like the most sort of like random weapon in the division still for scoring goals from expected set plays and things, which is, you know, it's no mean feat, even if you are 6'6".
He's got a fair header on him, that's for sure. I feel like Aaron Hughes was sort of understated at how good he was in the air. I think he could have been quite dominant at times, maybe slipped under the radar. But I don't think you can see past McBride and Mitrovic. And I think for this one, I'm going to go for McBride.
See, I actually went down the route that you didn't. I went with Hangeland. When I originally pitched this, I did mean heading in terms of an opposition box, and then I thought about it a bit more. And then I was like, well, heading works both ways. And then I remembered how many goals Hangeland scored. And there was a season or two where he was basically a fantasy football cheat code because he'd score like 6-7 headers a season and he'd be absolutely worth his weight in goals, as well as the time we were quite good defensively. So we didn't concede as many as we have in recent years. But I just remember him being just impossible to mark at corners. And I remember watching corner after corner go in and be like, well, we're going to score in a minute because we've got Hangeland. And, you know, we saw him score in big games against big teams, against good teams. And and important goals as well. You know, you think back to the Europa run, and you think of some of the goals that he nodded in, especially in the group stages, and you're like, oh, actually, they were very, very important goals. And so Hangeland stood out for me. I think what you said there, though, was interesting, Ben, about Aaron Hughes, because he actually was also a very good header of the ball, but next to Hangeland, he kind of goes forgotten a little bit.
Yeah. Well, that's the point I was trying to make. I feel like oftentimes it's Hangeland that gets a lot of the plaudits when Hughes was, I wouldn't say as good, but he was almost at a level with him. And some of the things he'd done just sort of went under the radar. I think a lot of people could potentially forget how much of a classy defender he was at times.
Absolutely. Well, let's keep things moving. So there's three different answers there. Dom, you've gone for Alexander Mitrovic, Ben, Brian McBride, and Breda Hangeland for myself. Let's move things on. Ben, I'm going to start with you this time. Left peg.
Well, for left peg, I've got so many written down, mainly because Fulham haven't had that many good players, and when they are good players, they almost always tend to be left-footed. I think it's mainly because a left-footed player, when you see them, are so rare that they stand out above the rest. So when I was racking my brains earlier about left foot, there were countless people that came up. For like defending and distribution, I had Tim Ream. I think he's got an excellent left foot on him. Obviously, there's Tom Kearney, Moussa Dembele, Brian Ruiz in there as well, who was definitely good at using his left foot. And although not taken to as well by the fans, I think like his left foot was magic at times. I'm finding it really hard to choose between all four of them, to be honest. So I may have my final answer after Dom's put his in.
Dom, I assume you haven't put Tom Kearney in your list.
No, I think for me it was only one player I thought of when I thought of left foot, and that was Louis Saha.
Yeah, although Louis Saha just scored goals with both feet.
Yeah, no, he's completely both footed. But I mean, if I'm looking at all the other categories and trying to find the perfect footballer to fit Louis Saha in, I'd put it on the left peg. But I think, you know, for me there wasn't anyone else sort of that close to him. And you know, I think with the likes of Brian Ruiz and Moussa Dembele, you know, you can have them in as physicality and passing, dribbling and things like that. But yeah, for me, I think the person that came straight to my mind straight away, and it was Louis Saha. Beau Morte came to my mind as well. But yeah, for me, it had to be Louis Saha.
At one point, I think it must have been around 12 to 14, that kind of era, Fulham had so many left-footed players. And I remember having a real issue with playing with Fulham on FIFA and basically be like, who goes on the right? Because we had so many footballers who were just like, right, and they're all left-footed. Ruiz and all of the players around him. Petric was there at that time. And you were like, where do we fit everyone in here? This is all quite difficult. But we were very much like a left-footed side. To go back to your point, Ben, and to go back to your argument, I suppose, a little bit, do you think we kind of revere left-footed players a little bit more because of the very nature that they're more rare? I mean, you very rarely hear someone say, oh, he's got a wand of a right foot.
Yeah, I think we do. I think it's just because I think there's an overwhelming majority of right-footed players that you sit there and think, oh, he's obviously a magician with the football. But when you see a left-footed player, because it's so out of the norm, I think your brain almost automatically sits there and thinks, this guy is completely different to anyone I've seen there. I think one of the reasons why I enjoy watching Tom Kearney so much is because it seems out of the norm to see a guy with the ball at his left foot spraying passes, whereas most teams have that right-footed player in that position.
It's like I think a southpaw boxer.
Yeah, it's like something completely different. Yeah, like you said, like a southpaw boxer or, you know, like a spin bowler in cricket. It's just something completely different, but it shows a level of technique that could potentially be seen as above the other, which I think is why left-footers are so massively revered.
Well, who are you going to go for then, Ben?
I think I'm going to go for TC in this one. Dom will probably have my guts here, but yeah, I'm going to go for Tom Kearney.
I'm going to join you, actually, even though I love Louis Saha and he is in my side, although he makes it in a different category. But just in terms of watching TC whip the ball, I think there are very few players we've had with the capacity to kind of come back over themselves. The way that the TC hits the ball, where he sort of curls back, and I think one of my favourite Tom Kearney goals, and well, maybe one of the most underrated, especially given the game it came in, was the first goal in the 2-2 draw with QPR, where he has the ball on the floor and he just cuts it back across into the near post. And obviously that game didn't end well, and there's obviously the Odoi mistake and all of these things, but it was just the way that he was just like, I'm going to score. It doesn't matter what you do, I'm going to score here. And, you know, some of the ones that overshadow it, obviously the Leeds goal, obviously the big whips into the top corner are the ones that get the highlight reels, get the players. But that goal where he's sort of just on the floor and there was like three options ahead of him as well. He could have just like laid it into Cess and there was people running and he was like, nah, I'm just obviously going to score here. and I think that's a massively underrated like part of the left foot, because normally you're like, oh, it should be going across the keeper, but it's not. It's coming back towards him and it just looks weird. And I love that so much. But anyway, enough about CC. Right foot. Don Betts, hit me.
So I had two written down here. I started off with Dimitar Berbatov. Obviously, he wasn't everyone's favourite player, but I think, you know, he's probably the most technically gifted player the club's seen. But, you know, if you throw it away back to the likes of Johnny Haynes, I guess. But, yeah, Dimitar Berbatov I had there. I also had Clint Dempsey down as well, just because of how many goals he scored over that, you know, 3 or 4 year period. So, yeah, for me, it was between Berbatov and Clint Dempsey. But I think Berbatov just edges it because, you know, all you need to look at is, like, you know, the volley or half volley against Stoke at home, the amount of times he just completely takes the ball out of the air and completely kills the ball. So, yeah, for me, Dimitar Berbatov.
Ben?
I only had two players written down for the right foot. One was Clint Dempsey and the other one was Ross McCormack. I think when I think of Clint, I think of the last couple of years we had him where he was banging in free kicks for fun. There was a wonderful free kick against Newcastle, I think, a wonderful free kick against Sunderland, an excellent free kick against Bolton, and so many crashing finishes from Dempsey. I think he also had the technique in that right foot to hold up play and spread it as well. And I think we saw his exploits for the USA sort of backing that up. But I think for me, in terms of what Ross did, the amount of goals he scored, where he scored them from, how he scored them, the amount of free kicks he scored, the vision, the passing that he has, the way he almost single-handedly kept us up, I think I'm going to go for Ross McCormack here. He's no, and that takes a lot for me to say because he's by no means one of my favourite players, but I think his right foot is nearly unrivaled at Fulham.
Yeah, I mean, I only had one player written down and it was Dimitar Berbatov. I just think that you look at things like the touch as well as the goals, you know, the touches where he just killed the ball dead. The ability that the man had was just absolutely outrageous, frankly. And, you know, it's easy to think of him and think back about the weird kind of schism in the dressing room, the pass me the ball, the, you know, the not tracking back, all of those things. But ultimately, for like a year and a half, we had one of the most talented footballers we've ever, ever, ever had at the Cottage, just sort of strolling around, sauntering about, doing his thing. And I cannot look past that. I think that the way that he struck the ball, the way that he caressed penalties home, all of them in one go for me just meant that it was a kind of shoe-in. It was a lock. Something that's interesting, though, is I've just thought that the next category is passing.
Mm.
And I guess this is a trickier one now, given that vision has already gone, I think, because so much of what you expect from passing is those kind of killer balls into the channels, the through balls, the crosses, all of those things. But I'm going to just ask you for a straight pass for the ball, and Ben, I'm going to start with you this time.
I think this is one of the categories where I struggled really, really badly, because there's so many of the players we've mentioned so far that can fall into this category, and a few of the obvious ones are Murphy, McCormack. There's Moussa Dembélé you could have in there. There's Tim Ream that you could have in there. McDonald. And I'm, again, the same as I was with the left foot, I'm really struggling now to make this a sort of like, oh, I'm going to pick him and it's done. So I think I might need Dom's swaying on this as well.
Dominom?
I've gone for... He's not an immediately obvious one, but I think he's one of the most accurate crosses of the ball, and his ability to set pieces, whether that's free kick or corners, I think has got to come into it now. And that was Simon Davis.
Yeah.
I know, because obviously when you think of passing, your mind instantly goes to old creative midfielders, especially through the centre. But I think, you know, Simon Davis, you know, I think he's not underrated. He's definitely a fan favourite, and you know, he came when we were rubbish, you know, 7-8, and was one of our best players in that Europa League run. But I think one thing that people, they probably do remember about, but I think, you know, his ability to find the right pass when he needed to was pretty much second to none from what I've seen, so I went straight with Simon Davis. But yeah, but I didn't really have anyone else written down just because I had Danny Murphy already written down for Vision.
Well, I'll take it on from you if Ben is struggling to decide, and this is where I have Murphy. And I think that the key to this is I don't remember, obviously there is the ball in the Hamburg game, but aside from that, I don't remember Murphy being that kind of arrow straight, those bullets kind of into the champs. What I remember Murphy being unbelievably good at was recycling the ball and just making sure that things kept ticking over, that kept possession rolling. And I think that you're right, Ben, Kevin McDonald is someone that should be considered in this category, because what Kevin McDonald does in terms of passing the ball is not particularly, you know, eye-inspiring. It doesn't shock anyone. But what he does is he keeps the ball moving so well. And similarly, Stefan Johansson at his prime, you know, just kept creating triangles, kept creating passing lanes, and just working the ball around. And I think we were very, very good at that for a while. But I've gone for Danny Murphy here because I think in terms of where I saw his passing, Vision wasn't it. But in terms of keeping us ticking, he was number one for me here.
Yeah, I completely get where you're coming from here. I think this might have to be where I choose Kev. I think there's an argument to say, and we sort of call him Scottish Busquets, and sort of like a tongue-in-cheek thing on Instagram and various social platforms just for the banter. And obviously, we did ask him via Fulham, did he like being called the Scottish Busquets? And he laughed. But I think there is definitely some sort of correlation, although tenuous, to the way that McDonald and Busquets play. They sort of do the nitty-gritty things that no one really talks about. Like you said, the recycling of passing, the stretching of play, acting as that anchor. And I think, yeah, over the past 3 or 4 years, he's been one of our most consistent passers. I'll go with Kevin McDonald on this one then.
Excellent. Well, we are over halfway, and it takes us on to pace, Dom. And I assume that both of you will be thinking of the same player here. So I'm going to throw to you, Dom Betts, to start us off.
The first player that came to my mind was Ryan Fredericks. It's a weird one. I don't think we've necessarily had loads of rapid players like over the last 20 years or so. I don't think like we've had, you know, I don't know if you compare it to some English players like Theo Walcott or an Aaron Lennon sort of type player who is simply rapid. But I went with Ryan Fredericks just because he's with a lot of these. I sort of have gone with just the first player who's sort of come to mind, because I think that's probably one of the best ways to really choose it, really. But yeah, I went with Ryan Fredericks because, you know, his footballing ability may not get him into dribbling or passing, but his sheer pace was sort of there to be seen. I think that is actually what got him out of a lot of mishaps that he made, was that sheer pace to be able to get back and get back into position. Often what you see Kyle Walker doing for Man City in England sometimes is that he's not necessarily the best technically at defending, but, you know, that sheer pace gets him back into position. So yeah, for pace, I went for Ryan Fredericks.
Frightening, as the song says. Ben, were you similar?
Yeah, the first one I wrote down was Fredericks. I think obviously we can talk about Fredericks as long as the night is. But when we look at pace, I also think that we should probably be considering someone like Sonia Luko, who did have really good pace over short bursts. Florida Aite did as well. Abubakar Kamara in the current team also has pace to burn. But I think, as Dom highlights, and rightly so, like, we've never been a team that are massively quick in terms of having hugely pacey players. I think only recently, in the past sort of like Jukanović era and then into Parker, have we really got players that have pace to burn. And before that, we sort of played a very lethargic style of play where we would move it around the box, or it's a very simple style of play under Hodgson, and we never really had that extreme express pace to sort of expose another team. So yeah, I think it's probably going to be between Fredericks and Abu, but then obviously you've got Saha as well, and Boa Morte was pretty rapid in his day. So yeah, but I don't think you can see past Fredericks.
Yeah, I went for Louis Saha here. This was where I thought that he fitted into my equation, because I just remember that kind of explosive first start where, you know, you see those goals against Man United in that first game we spent in the Premier League, and you're like, well, he's just absolutely burned everyone. And I think that immediate shock to the system where you were just like, well, he's actually lightning. Is something that I've never really got over. I don't know. That's my lingering memory of Saha. And obviously we've spoke about it before, but Saha was such an all-round player, and he had so many facets to his game in terms of he could shoot from inside the box, he could shoot from outside the box, he scored headers, he scored, you know, got goals with his feet, he got in the right positions, he got in behind, he dropped off. But the thing that always stands out to me is just how quick he was over the first couple of yards. And part of that is anticipation, of course, and learning how to read the game and those things. But just the way that he was able to just get in front of players has always been something that stood out to me. And I think that if, for my player, I want them to be explosive off the mark. I want them not to have IT band problems constantly, which is an issue with Ryan Fredericks. But Louis Saha for me, I think, the kind of pace I want, it wasn't necessarily, you know, he was going to run for days. It's not like Kamara who can chase the entire pitch down in one go. But it was just that kind of intelligent, explosive nature of Saha that really stood out to me. Which leaves us with two left, interestingly. And I'm going to go, you spoke about Sonny Aluko in that one, Ben. He probably is in this category as well, dribbling.
Yeah, I would say he was in dribbling. My only problem with Sonny Aluko is that he often didn't do very much with the ball when he was dribbling. It seemed to be down dark alleys and he didn't particularly use it very wisely and unfortunately didn't live up to his sort of technical ability at times for Fulham. I do 100% get what he done for us in that playoff run. But unfortunately for him, there's one guy that overshadows him completely, and there's only one world-class dribbler we've had at Fulham, in my opinion, and that's Moussa Dembélé, the Belgian.
Very good. Dom, who do you have here? I'd be interested to hear your thoughts, because I think it might go a little bit further back.
Dribblers was a weird one because obviously you speak about Moussa Dembélé and you know it's whether I think we've had better physical players than him or better dribblers than him. In dribbling, I did have Dembélé down, but it's weird. I feel like we've had two really good dribblers. They just weren't that good at doing it at Fulham. I feel like Tarapt and Brian Ruiz were very good dribblers. They just didn't show it necessarily at Fulham. If you're looking at dribbling and you look at, you know, Brian Ruiz at FC Twente before he joins Fulham, he was sensational. And then, you know, what he did at even the 2014 World Cup with Costa Rica. So it was a tough one, but I ended up choosing Moussa Dembélé here just because for the reason that Ben said is that no one even comes close to him when it comes to dribbling. Whereas I think when it comes to physicality, I think we've had some very good physical players who could, if you're just expressing the physical side of the game, could we put it. So for me, I just went with the fairly obvious option and easy option of Moussa Dembélé.
Yeah, I didn't. I kept him. He is in my final category. I think Sione Aluko, I think you're absolutely right, Ben. He often dribbled down dark alleys, but he was bloody good at finding his way out of them. At times it looked like he could dribble his way out of a post box. You know, he was unbelievably good with the ball at feet. Someone else who obviously never got to fulfil his potential and arguably still hasn't, but was unbelievably good with the ball at feet was Patrick Roberts. And I think that there still is, you know, elements when Patrick Roberts on the ball, you know, yes, he's been kind of dropping down the divisions. Yes, he's been kind of a little bit out of the game. But I do think that still on the ball, he's an absolute nightmare to defend against because of the way that he shoves the ball between his feet. And he still is very, very difficult to tackle. Someone else that completely never reached their potential, potentially, but was unreal, just not for Fulham, and maybe never for anyone, really, was Gael Kakuta. Gael Kakuta, yeah. I think, in a one-on-one, was probably like one of the best players I've ever seen. I remember him coming on for his debut against Newcastle and dribbling his way around five players and basically being like, oh my God, we've got the next Lionel Messi on our hands. And then obviously he didn't do anything ever again for anyone until he basically popped up in Ligue 1 recently and started doing slightly better. But I still think that on pure ability, Gael Kakuta, potentially one of the best.
I think one player that, if we're just looking at dribbling alone, and if every game was against Chelsea, you'd put Kieran Fry in. Because, yeah. I mean, that's the only game he ever turned up. One other game that sticks out of Kieran Fry was when we beat Arsenal 2-1 at home when Sidwell and Tomori both scored. I stand by. I think, I presume it was Martin Yeo managing at that point. I feel like he brought Kieran Fry on to purposely get Yohan Drew sent off because he was already on a yellow card and told him just to run and dribble at him. And then obviously he got that second yellow card. They went down to 10 men and then Zamora scored in the last minute to win us the game. So I think if you're just looking at that sort of dribbling alone, Kieran Fry is a decent shout. But yeah, I did stick with Moussa Dembélé in there because I wanted to put Brian Ruiz, but I never felt he quite, if we're looking at dribbling, he never quite did it at Fulham.
I actually went for someone different, apart from all of those names. I've gone for Steve Malbronk, who I'm shocked has not been mentioned in another category, frankly. Although he was a bit sort of, I'm really good at everything. I just think Steve Malbronk used to carry the ball so well, and not necessarily in kind of dangerous final positions, but actually in terms of the way he would sort of shape and then just beat a man and find a position. But he would be able to just sort of wiggle his way through channels constantly. And also then he moved to centre midfield and was really, really good at it there as well.
I think that's what made me forget him about being a dribbler, is obviously his latter end of his career at obviously Lyon, where he's more of a deep lying creative midfielder.
Yeah, he just sort of sprayed. But as a youngster, he used to absolutely fly around the pitch. And I've gone for prime Steve Malbronk in my dribbling category. Which takes us on to the final one. And you two don't have Moussa Dembélé here, which I do. So this is physicality. And I thought that, for me, nobody has ever shown me the kind of ability in a physical sense that Moussa Dembélé has. And I always go back to that game against Tottenham, which I'm 100% sure convinced them to buy him, where he basically just ran the show on his own. And he was just brushing off people. He was almost running through people at times. He was like, move out of the way. I'm going through there. That's my channel. And if you stand in my way, I'm just going to knock you over. And he did it with such elegance and such grace, with such brute force behind it, that no one in my head comes close to him in the ability, physicality-wise. You know, even Mitrovic now, who uses his physicality to great effect, I think is often a little bit kind of bullish with it and gets free kicks given against him. And I think he's a little bit of a victim of his own success in that regard. But on the whole, I don't remember free kicks being given against Moussa Dembélé. I just remember him just bulldozing through people and the ref being like, well, obviously he's just run through you there, pal. So there's not much you can do about that. So I'm interested. Dom, who have you got?
So the reason, as I said, I didn't have Dembélé here is because I feel like the other options you have for physicality are better than the other options you'd have for dribbling, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So two players that sprung to my mind straight away was Papa Bupi Diop and Dixon Atuhu. I just feel like they were just those enforcers in the middle of the park who had the strength and, as the topic suggests, the physicality to sort of block off anyone who came in their way in that midfield. But yeah, so I had sort of had written down Dembélé slash, but I ended up choosing Dembélé for dribbling. So for me, in the physicality category, I ended up choosing Papa Bupi Diop.
Ben, who did you go for?
I've got a couple of players marked down here. I think sometimes when I think of physicality, I don't think it necessarily means like how strong you are. I think when I look at physicality, I sort of look at more than just one category, like more, rather than how strong, how much you can put your body in the way. It's also, for me, it's about like acceleration and pace over short distances and how well you can hold up the ball, which is why I had Saha in there. In the physical category as well as the pace category. I felt like Saha was like a really physical kind of guy and that he would absolutely skin you alive, but also have the strength to hold you off once you caught up with him. I feel like this is really a toss-up for me between Saha and Mitrovic. And I can't decide which kind of player I want in here, which is the hardest part.
Someone who hasn't been mentioned here, who should probably get a mention, is Sir Barrington Hales, who was... You know, once you got anywhere near him, you were just, you know, you weren't getting past. Barry Hales was an absolute warhorse. And if he just held defenders off for fun. And I think I remember watching some goals kind of later than I remember him playing for Fulham. In some of the seasons where you're like, hang on, he was still there and he was still scoring goals. And just the videos of him just backing into defenders and the defenders just have no idea how to deal with him. And I do remember that being like very, very enjoyable on rewatch.
I think there's also a case to say that someone like Mamadou Diarra should be in there because when he was fit, he was really, really difficult to get off the ball. I think the way he manoeuvred his body, and it was in a very similar way to Moussa Dembélé. And I don't think you've ever had anyone that sort of knows how to get their body in the way as much as those two did and haven't had that since then. I think for me, I'm going to go for Mitrovic in this one.
There we go. And that is all eight categories wrapped, locked and loaded. Your Frankenstein footballers are built. Obviously, we're going to share these on social media and we will be asking you for your eight. So start thinking about that now. And basically, that's us all wrapped. It is a short and sweet episode. It's been a lot of fun. I'm just going to finish by asking, Dom, what are you going to do with your bank holiday?
Drink, play Football Manager, same as I've done for the last month and a half.
Dom, your existence sounds exceptionally sad and lonely. And much as it sounds enjoyable, like, I do worry a bit about you.
Nah, it's fine. Yeah, when my current aim is to try and win the World Cup with a team from every single continent. Done two onto my third continent at the moment. So
that's a really extreme version of the Pentagon.
Yeah, I know. Well, at the moment, I'm basically trying to win the Champions League with a team from every major league in Europe, which I've done with Scotland, Germany, France, Portugal, Spain, and I'm currently in Italy. So, I'd not that anyone really cares about the in-depth technicalities of my Football Manager save, which is currently in 2047.
I was going to to ask what year you're in.
What team are you currently?
Carpi.
Oh, right.
No, I don't like. I like picking a team at the lowest possible division I can. It's not. It's no fun if you start in the top division, is it?
No, you make a good point there.
Yeah, Ben, what are you up to
this weekend? I've got a route, a tour of Essex, and a friend of mine and me. We meet up and we go out for a little cycle. And this week we're looking at the not so secret nuclear bunker in Kelvedon Hatch, and then we'll be doing like a tour around the outside of. At the outskirts of Essex and then back home.
How many miles are you looking at, or kilometres should I say? I'm modern, I'm in touch with the metric system.
No, we like to keep it to miles, you know, because, you know, Britain and all that. Last weekend we did 85, which was pretty good. I think we'll probably be doing around about 60 or 70 this weekend. Last weekend we went to see the delights of Canvey Island, which is a notorious shithole, and a fort in Tilbury, which is also a notorious shithole.
Well, I mean, as long as you're having fun exploring the notorious shitholes.
Ben, can you start a new series called The Notorious Shitholes of Britain?
Well, just Essex, yes, to be honest. I think you should start filming them and putting them on Instagram.
Yeah, you wait until I go to Kent, mate. It's all over for them.
I would listen. Well, that's pretty much it from us. All that's left for me to do is say thank you to Dom Betts.
It's all right.
Thank you very much to Ben Jarman.
Thank you very much.
I've been Jack Collins. This has been the Fulhamish Podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. And we will continue to try to provide content through this desert of football. Obviously, the Bundesliga back. We're going to find a Bundesliga team for everybody to follow. And until that point, stay safe, stay well, stay home. We'll see you soon.
Acast powers some of the world's best podcasts. Here's a show we recommend.
Hey, it's Maria Hinojosa here.
And Julio Ricardo Varela.
We are the co-hosts of the Roundtable podcast, In the Thick, where we talk about politics, race, and culture from a people of color perspective.
That's right. Every Tuesday and Friday, we bring you the latest political news, covering the stories and issues that matter to communities of color with amazing POC journalists, activists, and academics from all over the country.
So you're not going to want to miss our coverage because we have a lot of fun.
We do.
Which means that on election night, November 3rd, we are going to be hosting a live virtual show to give you the much-needed POC perspective on this crucial night in our country.
Follow us on social media at In The Thick Show to make sure you don't miss the updates and this live analysis.
Subscribe to In The Thick wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast recommends.